Today we're going to look at bedtime. How do we get the kids to go to bed, stay in bed, and have a lovely night's sleep? That's because we want to have a lovely night's sleep. But it's really good for them as well, because when anybody in the family doesn't sleep well, there are strong effects on affect, that is, the way the mood goes, you know, no sleep, irritable, crabby, cranky mood. It also affects our cognitive abilities. So a child who doesn't have enough sleep really doesn't do as well in school the next day, because he's going to have more trouble with paying attention, he's going to have more trouble remembering what he's learning, and he's going to have more trouble problem solving. So that's trouble in three major cognitive areas. And to top it all off, a child who doesn't have enough sleep has worse behavior, more non-compliance, not listening to parents and teachers, more sort of a hyper, or even if they weren't hyperactive before, with lack of sleep they can become a little hyper or hyperactive, kind of wild behavior, and just less able to bring themselves under control. So they're not so pleasant, you know, having that bad mood, learning issues and uncooperative behavior. All that just makes a tired child not somebody who you want to spend too much time with, okay, and not a child who's going to be thriving. So it's up to parents to try and help kids get into some sort of healthy sleep routine. Now, we want to do that anyways, like I said, because, you know, in the evening you want to have some downtime for yourself as a parent. You want some marriage time. You want some personal private time. You know, there's things you're going to be looking forward to also. Now, there are lots of reasons why kids have trouble with bed issues. In fact, I don't know, I have to check on the accuracy of this statement. I didn't follow it through, but I did read on one website on the internet that there was a poll in 2004 of the National Sleep Foundation. So you might look that up. I didn't verify this, so I just want you to know. But that poll said that 69% of parents, that's almost 70% of parents, reported that their kids had sleep issues of some kind several times a week. And the sleep issues could be either that the child wakes up in the night or that the child has problems settling down to sleep, there's some sort of struggle getting the kid to bed, or both. So that seems to be the vast majority of parents are having issues, and that study was done on children from infancy right through to age 10. And then there's different issues with teenagers, which we'll look at a little bit later, but still, if you're having problems with your child's sleep time routine, you are not alone. Nonetheless, why not be in the happy 30% who don't have problems? So let's try and get ourselves into that group. Now, children who don't listen in general, who have listening problems, often have struggles at bedtime. I mean, this is the group that doesn't respond well when you tell them it's time to start their homework or clean up their toys or get dressed or have their bath or, you know, even come to the table for dinner. Whatever you're asking them to do, they just don't cooperate. So in some households, there's kind of a lack of order, shall we say, where the parent can get the cooperation of a child just because the parent asked. So in those kinds of households, it's pretty unlikely that the child will just drift off to bed when the parent says, okay, it's time for pajamas now, time for bed. So we just quickly will review some of the conditions that we want to have operating in the house that contribute to the child's ability or likelihood of cooperating, of listening. So for children under the age of 12, we have something called the 80-20 rule. And that means that 8 out of 10 of our communications with that child need to feel pleasant to the child. This foundational rule helps the child be in the kind of relationship with us that he wants to listen. Okay, the child who feels that the parent is pleasant almost always has a good relationship with the parent and really doesn't want to start up so much and just doesn't want to hurt or disappoint or provoke the parent. It's not that fun when you're dealing with somebody who you really like. So the 80-20 rule for children under 12 becomes the 90-10 rule for children over 12, Because as people become teenagers, they have less tolerance for the negativity of their parents, so less criticism now in the teenage years, although some parents don't know this rule and they actually give more criticism. But if you want to gain the cooperation of your kids, that 80% consists of pleasant conversation, positive feedback, compliments and praise, gifts and treats and hugs and kisses and quality time, good listening, showing understanding, all kinds of really pleasant interventions. And the 20%, or for teenagers now, the 10%, that includes all of our instructions, like time to go to bed now, you know, that kind of thing, time to get up now. We call those unpleasant communications because they're unpleasant from the child's point of view. So in that category of the 20% or the 10%, we're talking about instructions, criticisms, complaints, threats of punishment, you know, just even ignoring a child. And our own bad mood is thrown into that category as well as also the fights that we're having with other people in the background, like our spouse or our mother or whoever. So any negativity, criticism, complaints, instructions, and threats are, you know, very common kinds of parental communications, and they're much too common. The more we are reprimanding a child or threatening a child, complaining to the child, etc., the worse the child's behavior will be. And around bedtime, where parents are actually fighting with kids, you know, if you taped that communication, actually videotape it if you can so you can see the whole thing in live action and see what are you, the parent, saying to your child at this time of day. So it better be pleasant, because the pleasant communication is the one that builds the child's desire to cooperate. We can use also one of our techniques called emotional coaching around the bedtime, where the child says, you know, I don't want to go to bed. All right, we understand, and we can communicate that understanding by using that technique called emotional coaching, which involves the naming of feelings. So we say to the child, oh, I know, honey, you want to stay up and play some more. You're having so much fun. Or, I know you're not quite sleepy yet. You're just not interested in getting into bed. And we don't say that sarcastically. We say it seriously, that we understand that the child really just doesn't want to go to bed. That's okay. Doesn't mean he's not going, but we understand that he doesn't want to. And that understanding is a form of good feeling communication. It's sympathetic. It's positive. You know, don't follow that sentence with the word but, because but acts like an eraser and just sort of takes out all the good. So it sounds like, I understand you don't want to go to bed, but tough for you, kid. You know, so we put a period and a pause after that sentence. So we go, oh, I know, honey, you don't want to go to bed now. You want to stay up and read a bit longer. Period. Pause. And then we start a new sentence. Trouble is, it is bedtime now, so we have to turn off that light and put away the books and settle down. You know, it's just a new sentence. That's how we do it. And then, as we'll see a little bit later, if we need to use more educational directive techniques to get the child to cooperate, we can use our CLEAR method, that's comment, label, reward, to help a child be reinforced, positively reinforced for cooperation about going to bed. So let's say the child, we said, okay, it's time for bath now, or it's time to get your pajamas on, or it's time to put away your toys, or whatever we said, time to turn off the computer, whatever we said. If the child actually complies, and this sometimes does happen, then we want to give the child a positive comment. Like, we'll jump in there and we'll say, oh, I see you turned off that computer right away. And then a label, a positive label. So we go, wow, you're a great listener, or boy, you're cooperative. And then a reward, if this is a new behavior that we're trying to encourage, like if we're having troubles around bedtime and the child is just, you know, not listening enough, but once in a while it does. So this is a good opportunity to use that CLEAR method, comment, label, reward. So we give a reward just for a few times and then thin that reward out and just toss it away after just a few times of using it. But we want the child to know, boy, we really appreciate when she moves when we ask her to move, you know. So if we said, okay, time to turn off the video, honey, get ready for bed, and she goes, okay, and she turns it off, then again we would go with, wow, you listened right away. That was very cooperative of you. You know, honey, why don't you just watch it for another 5 minutes? I think you deserve that, you know, just because you listened so nicely. And that could be the reward. Or the reward could be a big hug and a kiss. Or it could be mentioning that, oh, by the way, honey, I forgot to tell you, I picked up that ice cream for you that you like. It's in the freezer and we can have it tomorrow for dinner. Like, just, it could be anything at all. It's just something that shows the child at those moments when she has decided to cooperate, we're really pleased and we're going to make it worth her while. You know, we're going to give her lots of positive attention, three types of positive attention: a specific comment that's acknowledges the desirable behavior, a positive label that moves that behavior into the future because it makes her the kind of person who does this behavior, and a reward for a few times to show her that we really appreciate it, it's a valuable thing, and to put a biological link into the brain, because once the brain receives a reward, it strengthens the neural pathway there that is the learning that we want the child to learn. So those are some of our background techniques. Now let's look specifically at bedtime. We want to make sure that the child's environment is conducive to sleeping, so we keep the room a little bit cooler. They say that a moderate, like, you know, comfortable temperature room, but a little bit on the cool side, helps the body to settle into sleep. We try and stick with a consistent routine and not be, you know, one night we do, you know, go to bed at 8, another night 9, sometimes 7, you know, sometimes 11, you know, not that kind of thing, but as close as possible to the same time every night, following a sleep ritual. The ritual itself will eventually cue the body to the fact that it's time to settle down. So for some children, this will be a bath. Excuse me. I'm just going to cough here. A bath, a story, perhaps, if it's a young child, or the child herself, if she's older, and can read her own book for half an hour or 20 minutes before bedtime. Some kind of quiet activity. They say it's not such a great idea to sit in front of a TV screen of any kind, a monitor, anything like that before bed, because the light of it gives the wrong signal to the brain. So we prefer to have just a regular reading light, sort of that kind of illumination, and a book or a puzzle or something quiet. You know, maybe if the child is of a certain age, you want to come in and read to the child or talk, you know, about the day, but nothing that's too arousing at the time that you want this child to go to sleep. Nothing too exciting, certainly no wild games or uproarious, you know, laughter and games and, you know, running around and all that stuff. None of that. Just quiet time. And we want that bedtime ritual to be something that is pleasant and loving and warm and comforting for the child. I personally think there's nothing wrong with lying down with a child of, you know, a child who's maybe up to 6 or 7 or even 8 years old. I know a lot of parents will do that, although they don't want to confess it to too many people. But you can lie down with a child for a few minutes, right? I'm not talking about lying down there for an hour. But if you want to settle the child down and you like that cuddle time and it helps the child to sleep, you know, fall asleep lovingly, I don't think it harms the child, and I think it's a beautiful time that really is a very short time in life, and then you grow out of that. I mean, you're not going to lie down with a 12-year-old, okay, or even a 9-year-old who's developing her own sexuality. No, this is for children, right, for young children. And just for, as the older the child is, the less time that might be. So that might be 5 minutes lying or 10 minutes or something like that. And then when the lying time is over, if you've decided to lie down with your child, then you just get up and go. And you can tell a child, you know, who's 6 years old or 5 years old, mommy will be leaving in a few minutes. Okay, I'm only staying for 10 minutes, or I'm only staying for 5 minutes. And the child will learn what you mean by 5 minutes if, in fact, you actually get up after 5 minutes each time. And you could say to the child, so I'll be leaving, so if you want to fall asleep while I'm still here, you better do that. You know, do it now because I'm going to be leaving. And young children particularly do find it easier to fall asleep in the comfort of the presence of a parent. So now, we don't want to get too hung up. I mean, the ideal thing is for the child to be sleeping in his or her own bed. And, of course, it's much more convenient if the child knows how to sleep without the parent, so that the parent is free to go out in the evening, not be home, be flexible, not worry, right? So that lying down thing is kind of like an added frill and should not become a demand for performance. You know, sometimes, you know, if the child says, could you lie down with me? The answer can sometimes be, not tonight, honey, I'm busy. Or not tonight, sweetheart, I'm going out. Or okay, tonight, just for a few minutes. You know, nothing that you want to get stuck on, because the child really needs to learn how to fall asleep herself, and especially in the night when she wakes up again, as she recycles into lighter sleep, you want to make sure she knows how to fall asleep without coming to get you to lie down with her, so that, you know, that should just be one of the options. Now, that's kind of what you're setting up as your routine, but it's okay, I was going to say, to have some exceptions. You don't have to be rigid, rigid, rigid. If you have a three-year-old who likes to sleep near the near you, so she likes to see you or something, it's not impossible. I just want you to know you could have that child fall asleep in the living room or in the family room, whatever, near you, so she can see you on the main floor while she falls asleep. And this can be done by saying something like, well, you can fall asleep down here while I'm working in the kitchen, but I'm only giving you 10 minutes to fall asleep. And if you're not asleep within those 10 minutes, then you'll just have to go upstairs and finish falling asleep in your room by yourself. And sometimes that a child will respond to that by learning to quickly fall asleep in the living room couch, and then just, you know, a parent can carry the kid up to the bed later and all is well. I mean, you want sleep time to be a happy, secure time, especially for these little people, you know, the ones who are 2 and 3 years old, just getting out of their cribs and into their own rooms. Sometimes there isn't even another sibling in the house yet, you know, and they feel lonely. No need to be too uptight and no need to worry about independence. You know, children all go to sleep in their own beds eventually, and they all leave your house knowing how to sleep. And this is not something that you have to worry that you're going to hold the child back from developing normally. If she falls asleep on the couch, you know, near you, that's not going to harm the child, as long as the child is actually going to sleep. So your goal should be that the child has her sleep, and that she has it with as much feeling of security and love as possible. You don't want to have a big fight with a kid every night before they go to bed, which is exactly what many parents do. They actually just have, you know, it starts off nicely, but it degenerates, and by the time the exhausted parent, you know, an hour later is fed up with the kid and like just not going to bed, it can become very ugly. So that's not what you want, okay? You want it to be a very nice time. Remember, too, that there are some kids who have sleeping issues because they are on the anxious side. They maybe don't like the dark. They're afraid to sleep, you know, in a darkened room. Or they don't like to be alone. They have those separation issues. And between those two things alone, some kids just really have a problem every night for years on end. And it can really exhaust the entire family. You know, those behavioral characteristics I said about mood and attention and bad behavior. Well, you know, a sleep-deprived parent isn't too pleasant to live with either. So when it's important for the parent's well-being as well as the child's well-being that we find solutions for the sleep difficulties. And for the anxious child, there are some solutions from the natural path. For example, Bach flowers, that's B-A-C-H, and you can learn about them on bachflower.com is a website that I've seen, or there's many websites on them and many books on them. You can ask your naturopath about them as well, or a Bach flower practitioner, who I'm sure you can find in your area or online. There's lots of information about this. But Bach flowers are particularly wonderful for children's sleep anxieties. Their tendency to toss and turn, or to have too many worries on their mind, or to be afraid of the dark, or robbers, or being alone. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, every child will guaranteed respond well to Bach flowers, but a very high percentage will. And I myself have been treating clients with Bach flower therapy for years now, and one of the, you know, it's just wonderful to hear from parents when they say, oh, it's solved the sleep problem, she's finally, you know, she's going to bed, and you know, they're just so happy, the child's so happy. So, you know, that is something I do personally recommend. It's a harmless treatment, can never cause anybody any side effects of any kind. It's called vibrational medicine, and you know, look into it if you have an anxious sleeper. Another technique that can help children with anxieties around bedtime is something called energy psychology. One variety of that is called emotional freedom technique, or EFT, which you can learn about at emofree.com. That's emofree.com. Although there's many varieties of energy psychology. It's a self-help technique that the parents can use on the child who's old enough can use it on herself to make the fears go away, and it can provide a lot of rapid relief. In the book that I wrote, Raise Your Kids Without Raising Your Voice, there's a chapter dedicated to to energy psychology, actually, to showing parents how they can use this technique with kids. So you can learn it from there as well. But there's lots of internet resources and, you know, for this particular technique, and books that you can find in bookstores on it also. Energy psychology, or sometimes called meridian psychotherapy. But it's a great little self-help tool. And finally, there is regular psychotherapy, cognitive behavioral therapy for children who have sleep time anxieties. And there's no need to let your child just suffer for, you know, years on end with fears. And sometimes the fears just go away after a few months, and sometimes they don't, you know. So it can be quite a lot of loss of sleep for parents and children if those fears are not attended to. And it can be just miserable for a child. So sometimes these kids just won't sleep in their room by themselves, and they're going all over the house looking for a sibling, looking for a parent, whatever they... And it can be very disruptive to everybody in the family, and not necessary because one of these forms of therapies, you know, the Bach flowers or the energy psychologies or the psychotherapies, you know, one of these things will kick in. So I think that it's important to give your child the help that he or she needs. Now let's look at sleep problems, the type that normal children have, that is the 70% we were talking about before, where they won't settle down to bed, or they won't go to bed. You know, you tell them to go and they're in there after the little sleep routine is done, the parent leaves the room and the child comes out. So in this case, we need a discipline strategy. The two times rule is very useful for getting kids to go back to bed and stay in bed. The two times rule would say to a child, let's say that the kid always pops out of bed after. So on a Monday night, the parent says to the child, once your bedtime has arrived, let's say it's 8 o'clock, you need to stay in bed. Okay, don't come out because you need to go to sleep. You need to have your sleep. Mommy and daddy need their private time. So you just stay in bed once 8 o'clock has arrived. Okay, a few minutes after that, the parents go, you know, leave the room, and the child pops out again, wanting water or wanting to forget something downstairs or remembers he has to tell you something or whatever. So this is step two. And you say to the child, oh, we told you a few minutes ago that you can't come out once 8 o'clock has arrived because you need your sleep and mommy and daddy need their private time. You need to stay in bed. Okay, that's a structure. That structure is don't do such and such because of such and such. Do such and such instead. Okay, that's the two times rule here. So we're on step two of it, so we add a warning on step two. And the warning says, from now on, when you come out of that room, you're going to go stand against a wall for 2 minutes. Well, actually, not 2 minutes. If the kid is, let's say this child that we're talking about is 7 years old, well, at least if he's going to bed at 8 o'clock, I guess he might be 8 years old. So we'll say the child's 8 years old. We can say, you can stand against the wall for 6 minutes, okay? And every time you come out, it's going to be 2 minutes longer than that. Now, this is a nice punishment for children because when they're coming out of their room, they're not really wanting to go stand against a wall. That would be pretty boring for them. And it's going to get more boring the more they come out of the room. So it's something that will cure them within a night or two. It will cure them for a long time. Because if they actually come out, the parent goes to step three, which is just saying, oh, you're out of your room, you have to go stand against a wall. And when I say stand against the wall, we mean that the child should be looking at your most boring wall, you know, not a one with fantastic wallpaper designs and stuff, but just a plain white wall would be ideal. And the child has to stand, not sit, because it's too comfy and cozy sitting there. We just want to annoy the child a bit. And and there's no talking or singing or playing around. The child must stand. And then if the child, after the child has finished standing, they go right back to bed. And then if the kid comes out again, well, he's going to be standing there now for 10 minutes. And if he comes out after that, he's going to be standing there for 12 minutes, and so on. I mean, it gets pretty tedious. Now, the first night or two, it's also tedious for the parent, but after that, the child will just decide to stay in bed, you know. Now, the question you might be having is, how do you get the kid to stand against the wall? Do you scotch tape him to the wall or something? Like, how do you get him to stay there? And this is answered on a lecture we did earlier called, I don't know if it's called the two times rule or discipline or something, but it's all spelled out there and also in my book, Raise Your Kids Without Raising Your Voice. But I'm going to say right here that there's something worse that can happen to this child than standing against the wall. You have to figure out for each of your kids what that worse thing would be. Because just like when a policeman gives you a ticket, if you don't pay that ticket, something worse will happen to you, right? The ticket is the policeman's opening move. If you don't pay the ticket, he doesn't care because he's got worse things up his sleeve for you. An increased price, a fine that's, you know, cost you more money, an inability to renew your license or your car license, whatever, or ultimately jail. So we need to know that there's something worse than standing against the wall for a number of minutes. And by the way, the number of minutes that we choose is about the age of the kid plus or minus 2 minutes. I mean, that in general, when we're using a timeout kind of punishment. So, you know, if he's the child is 8, we start him off at 6 minutes. If he's 4, we start him off at 2 minutes and so on. Now, so if this child, let's say, doesn't cooperate with you when you say go stand against the wall. Instead, he runs laughing down the hallway, you know, no way, and it goes off the other way. You can say, well, that's fine. If you're not standing against the wall by the time I count to 5, then you can forget the wall. And instead, such and such worse punishment will happen to you. And you've already got that in mind before you start this technique with your child. You know what the worst punishment will be because we don't say to a child such and such. We actually name the price, right? So for a particular kid who's addicted to the computer, we say, oh, that's fine. So then, you know, you won't have the computer for 2 nights instead. And then the child might say, I don't care, possibly because he doesn't believe you, or he's just, you know, bravado, whatever it is, but you don't care that he doesn't care. So you'll count to 5, that's 1, that's 2, and so on until you get to 5. And then if he's really not against that wall, then you say at number 5, well, that's it, you've lost computer for 2 nights. Now at this point, the child is running down your hallways, or he's in the kitchen eating his cereal, whatever he's doing, he's not standing against the wall and he's not in bed. And that's fine, okay, because this may take you a week to solve the bedtime problem, which is a wonderful investment because it, better that than waiting, 5 years till you get it under control. So it's okay. Now you're just ignoring this child until he falls asleep on the floor. It doesn't really matter. But the next 2 nights, he does not have his computer, if that's what you picked. And you would pick that only if that would be devastating to this particular kid. If losing a sweet dessert and his lunch or something or dinner would be devastating, then you'll pick that instead. You're looking for something that would be much worse from the child's point of view than standing against the wall. And again, you can look up the details of this approach in either the book or on the previous lecture that we had here. So hopefully you get to the point where the child now wants to stand against the wall, and then you do that for a few nights, and then the child should be staying in his bed. That's just one idea, right? Now, if a child that we're talking about is much older, let's say it's a teenager who just, he goes to bed whenever he wants, You can have that as an arrangement in your house. Yes, you can have the privilege of going to bed whenever you want. That's fine, as long as you can get up in the morning and function well and you're not too miserable, etc. So, and then if the child does not get up easily in the morning, let's say it's a 15-year-old who you just cannot get him up in the morning, then you can negotiate with that child about what to do about bedtime. You say, well, you know, you're a big boy now, but you're not able to get up in the morning, and I think that, you know, your bedtime needs to be adjusted. What do you think, right? It can be a respectful, loving, you know, good conversation. But if the child cannot bring his own behavior under control, then it's okay for you as a parent to, again, take away privileges. You know, you can say things like, well, you can go to bed whatever time you want, but if you're not up in the morning easily when the alarm goes off or at 7:30, whatever time you're supposed to leave, then such and such consequence will happen, right? So you can punish the child on the other end, the morning end, when he's a little bit older, because you don't really chase, you know, 17-year-olds around to get them to go to bed. All right, well, those are some ideas around, you know, dealing with the bedtime issues. There's probably tons more we could say about this. I guess on this side, that our ability to use the two times rule, where we say it once, and then on the second time, we repeat what we're saying, but we give a warning, that is key to having a peaceful bedtime, because you don't want to be coming in and coming in and coming in and coming in until you blow a gasket, right? You want to be in control and quiet and get yourself out of there quickly before you get mad. Bedtime needs to be pleasant and loving, not a battleground. So that's up to you. You know, you can't be running into the room saying, how many times do I have to tell you to stay in bed? You know, because the how many times is two. Two is the maximum number of times. By the third time, the kid needs a punishment. And the punishment I mentioned about standing against the wall, that is one option. You can find any punishment you want that will be motivating to your child. And it may take a few days or even a week to get the power of that negative consequence such that the child actually goes to bed. But let your negative consequences do the teaching and keep personal anger and a raised voice out of it. Okay, you need it to be pleasant. So, sweet dreams to everybody in your family.